Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I'm your host, Christina Michelle, and today we are talking about being a mother and raising children of color in the social climate that we are in right now, especially pertaining to racism and all of the things that have been happening around the George Floyd trial and all the questions that have been raised. Now, talking about this subject, there was one person that came to mind who I knew would be able to give us a really good perspective. She is an amazing woman. She's one of my oldest and dearest friends. Her name is Natasha Boozer. And Natasha is a woman of God who was raised right here in Juneau, Alaska. She's also a wife and a mother of two and an accomplished author. Welcome, Natasha.
Hi, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have you too. And I'm really excited to, well, I'm always excited to talk to you, but especially about this topic today. It's not something that I think is talked about enough. And I think that you are the perfect person because I know that you were raised here in Juneau. And so you know our environment, you know the culture here, and you also have lived on the East Coast. You have lived on the West Coast. And so I think you have a lot to offer to this subject and coming from a lot of different perspectives. So I'm really excited to do this with you.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
So Natasha, tell me about your book.
So I wrote a book called The Palmer Women, and it's this suspenseful thriller about four women who, after years of living their lives apart, come together at the funeral for the matriarch of their family. They all have secrets that unfold after the funeral, and there's lots of twists and turns in discovering how the matriarch died. You know, one of the things that I love about this book is how sexy and honest it is. I wrote this book because I couldn't find anything worth reading, and I really wanted to read a book that I couldn't put down. So I hope that my readers enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it.
That's awesome. I love when someone invents the thing that they want for themselves. You know, it's like instead of looking for it or waiting for somebody else to do it, you just get up off your butt and do it yourself.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I have read the book and I absolutely loved it. Your intentions were achieved because I couldn't put it down. And it had some parts in it that I were like, oh my goodness. Okay, Natasha, excuse me. This book is adult.
Yes, it is. It's not for children.
But it had a great storyline to it, and I really, really enjoyed it. And at the end of this interview, I'll ask you where our listeners can get a copy of it if they're interested. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you so much.
Okay. So getting into our topic for today, can you just share a little bit about being a mother, how many kids you have, what are their ages, and what do you love about being a mom?
So I'm not sure if people know this, but I never wanted to be a mom because I grew up in a big family with seven people. And so I wanted to live with my husband and just meet and tour the world. But one day everything changed. And I think that I was afraid of being a mom because I saw how hard my mom worked. I was just like, you know what? I don't think that's for me. But everything changed when I gave birth to my first child. So I have two kids, Moses and Grace. Moses is 13 and Grace is 7. So it's impossible to list everything that I love. But I will say that there was this moment that happened when each of my children were born. And I remember it like it was yesterday. It was the moment just after I'd given birth. And all the nurses and doctors were gone. And I was left alone with them that first night. I remember looking into their eyes and both of them looking back at me. And there was this overwhelming feeling of love. That connection between me and my kids hasn't gone away. It's just grown. And even when there are challenging moments with them where I feel disappointed in something they've said or done, that loving connection is still there. And I absolutely love that about motherhood.
That's so sweet. I don't have any children yet. I'm still I'm still hopeful,
yes.
But that feeling, I've heard other mothers describe something similar to what you're saying, where it's like, I didn't know that I could love someone so much until I had my child. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is. Your heart just grows. You don't have to make room for it because your heart makes room for it.
I know that you grew up here in Juneau, and yeah. You mentioned having a big family, and yes. I know your family, and I adore your family. You guys are so wonderful, and I'm wondering, what was your experience like growing up here in Juneau as a Black person and yes. a Black female?
Yes. Well, most of the racism I experienced growing up in Juneau was at school, because I was a kid. We moved there when I was 8 and left when I was 18, my whole childhood. And so the racism that I experienced there started really early. The first racist moment that I can remember was in the fourth grade. And I know I've shared this story with you. There was this boy that I had a huge crush on. And I think I was about 9 years old at the time. In fact, if you recall, I think most of the girls in our fourth grade class had a crush on him. And before I tell this story, I have to preface this by saying that I attended a private Christian school that is pretty well known in Juneau. So as I was saying, I had a pretty huge crush on this boy, and I was 9, so I wasn't very good at hiding it, obviously. And one day, my fourth grade teacher pulled me aside and told me that I should stop having those feelings for him because he was white and I was Black. And it would be better for me if I had those feelings for someone of my own race. She said that Black and white people didn't mix. I remember thinking that as Christians, we're taught to love each other regardless of what color we are. That's what they taught us at this school. So I couldn't understand why I couldn't have a crush on him. You know, at 9 years old, I just didn't understand why she singled me out. But I guess that's just one example of racism. That was my first experience, but it wasn't the last. There were many times where I was singled out and made to feel less than, and only later did I realize it was because of the color of my skin. As a child, I don't think I always knew it was going on, but as I've come into adulthood and looked back on those memories, I can see, oh, that was racist.
Right. You
know? And I think that a lot of people can relate to not knowing that they were experiencing racism when it's happening to them as a child.
How did it affect your spirit for a teacher, someone that you look up to tell right. you that it would be better for you to, you know, have a crush on somebody your own color?
Right. I think that it made me feel ashamed. And, you know, I've had to come to terms with the fact that growing up in Juneau, I wanted to be white. I wished that I was white because I always felt like the color of my skin held me back. And that was sort of the environment that I was a part of at that school. I felt like because of my skin color, I wasn't good enough. You know, I wasn't smart enough. I couldn't sing well enough. I wasn't treated as an equal as my other friends who were white. And it took me a long time to be like, I'm Black and I'm beautiful and I'm proud of my skin. It wasn't something that happened easy for me. It wasn't something that I was really able to fully step into until well into my adulthood.
Yeah. Did that shape your decision to go to the East Coast?
Yes. I wanted to get as far away as I could, to be honest. And I didn't want to stay there. I felt like there had to be more in the world. And I did feel like Juneau was this bubble. And I didn't want to, as a Black woman, I feel like my instinct was, I want to experience Black America, and I'm not really going to get that here. That's how I felt at the time,
yeah. You know,
in the late 90s, so long ago. I wanted to experience the real world, because I felt like in Juno, it didn't tell the whole story of the Black experience.
Absolutely. So you're a mom now, and I'm wondering what challenges you have raising your children. Do you think they are having the same experiences that you had, even though you don't live here in Juneau anymore? Or how does that play out?
I don't think they've had the same experience at all, because I homeschool them. So, and they're still quite young. I think it's still early on for them to really experience what racism is like. But one of the challenges that I have faced so far as a mother of children of color is trying to explain to them and prepare them for why certain people will hate them because of the color of their skin, or certain people will have preconceived notions and prejudices because of the color of their skin. It's a really difficult conversation to have, but I know that I would be doing them a huge disservice if I hid that from them. So right now, that is one of the main challenges that I have. And I fully expect that to change as they grow older and go out into the world. But right now, that's definitely something that I struggle with right now.
Okay. Interesting. I have a couple of follow-up questions to what you just said, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into this conversation. If you're just joining us, this is Christina Michelle, and I'm speaking with our guest, Natasha Boozer, and we are talking about being a mother of Black children in today's social and racial climate. We'll be right back. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Christina Michelle, and today's show is a collaboration between the Black Awareness Association of Juno and KTOO. We are talking about being a mother and raising kids of color, specifically Black kids, in today's social and racial climate. Our guest is Natasha Boozer, who is one of my really good friends and is a mother of two. And Natasha, you're currently in Las Vegas right now, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So before we went to break, you were sharing about some of the challenges that your kids have, you know, right now around racism and recognizing and starting to understand what that is. Around what age would you say that started to become a topic of conversation?
Wow. I would say maybe around, I want to say 6 or 7 years old, there was an experience that I had at a playground. And I hadn't planned talking about this, but it's the truth. So I had taken my son Moses to the park, and we were the only Black family there. And there was a bunch of other kids, white children around. And I heard this child yell quite loudly to my son, "Oh, he's an N-word." And my husband and I quickly grabbed our kid and we left the park. And then I had to explain to him what that word meant, why that person who was a child said that to my son and called him outside of his name. And but it wasn't a conversation that I had hoped to have at such a young age, but that experience thrust me into it. And I had to just be honest. I wasn't going to pretend like it didn't happen, because he heard it. He'd never heard that word before. And we always look at challenging moments as teachable moments. My husband and I take the time to explain to our children what happened, ask them if they have any questions, and let them express their own feelings about it, so that there's an open dialogue about it and they're not afraid to talk or ashamed because they experienced a racist moment.
Did he know what the N-word was? And we no. can say it.
I don't even say it in my own life.
Okay.
But no, he'd never heard the word before. He didn't know what it meant. We don't say that word. So he didn't know what it meant. We had to sit him down and explain it to him. Yeah.
Okay. What do your kids know about the George Floyd incident and, the other incidences that have happened with Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery? Do you guys talk about it? It's on the news all the time. Is this something that you try to shield them from, or is it something that's incorporated into your family discussions?
So Moses knows everything about it. Again, he's 13, and my husband and I, we watch the news, and sometimes the kids will migrate into the area and they will see certain images on the TV. And so Moses knows everything about it, but Grace is too young to truly grasp all of it just yet. But I'll definitely tell her when she's older. One of the things that I have said to Grace, because she's 7, is that just like there are bad teachers, there are also bad police officers. People in positions of public service are still just people. And there are kind people and there are racist people. So that's how we, explain it to them. I definitely don't shield them from it. I lean into it. And one of the things that I love about homeschooling my kids is that I have the privilege to teach them the truth about American history. The Black Panthers, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., Harriet Tubman, Underground Railroad, everything and all of it. There's no whitewashing American history in our house.
I love that. Wow. It gives them such a strong foundation. It helps to mitigate those feelings of there's something wrong with me,
right,
or I'm less than because right, my skin color is different from others. That's something that I feel was missing in our upbringing. Like, I didn't necessarily feel like I was less than because I was Black, but as I got older and started to learn more for myself about our own history, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. How come we weren't taught this in school? Nobody mentioned this. Yeah, I think it's amazing.
That was a big aha moment for me, letting me know that I was doing the right thing and on the right track, was when Moses was in the second grade and I taught him about slavery and the slave trade and how our ancestors, what they went through. I thought that he would feel negative feelings, but he was like, Mom, I am so proud to be African American because the people that I come from were strong and brave and they fought for their freedom. I was
yes!
Like,
yes!
Thank you, Jesus. Yes, yes.
Good job, Mom.
But yeah, I'm so thankful that I get to teach them about it.
So what concerns do you have about raising your son in today's climate? I mean, he's 13 years old, so soon he's going to have a permit and then a driver's license, and he'll be rolling around the streets of Vegas.
Oh my goodness.
Just being young, gifted, and Black, and minding his own business. And how does that make you feel?
Well, the growing up part, I'm not ready. I'm trying to be ready. I'm trying to let go of the reins and let him live, because he's taller than me and his voice is very deep. And he still startles me if I don't see him. I'm like, who is this man in my house? But but in regards to your question, I have so many concerns, and it really breaks my heart when I think about it, because I know my son and he's such an amazing guy, but I have concerns about him driving a car and being pulled over because he's Black. I have concerns about him being out with a group of friends and the police singling him out, to harass him because he's Black. I have concerns about him being discriminated in the workplace, or even just while doing some mundane everyday errand. O'Neill, that's my husband, O'Neill. He and I have worked very hard to educate Moses regarding the way Black males are treated in this particular country. And it's so disheartening because there's this look that Moses gets in his eyes. And it's always a question of why. Why are people so racist? Why do they go out of their way to oppress people of color, and especially men and boys of color? you know, the day that I had to tell him that even people who claim to be Christians can be racist was one of the hardest moments that we've had. Moses and I both cried because it hurt so much to tell him that, but it was and still is absolutely true. I honestly believe that if a person calls himself a Christian and they're still racist, to me, they're not Christians at all. You know, I think that's something that we have to acknowledge and speak about, because there are people who say they love Jesus and they pray and they read the same Bible, and yet they have these racist thoughts and racist actions, which is in complete contrast as to what we're taught as Christians.
Where do you think that comes from?
Oh my goodness.
I know it's a loaded question.
And I don't expect to answer it fully, but I can tell you my thoughts.
Yes, please. Facts,
they're my thoughts. You know, I think that it's tradition. I think that it goes way back to the colonization of America. And I think that the people that came from England to America, they already had these racist thoughts, and slavery was already a thing over in Europe. And I think that back all those years ago, people looked at Black people as property, number one. And I think that they looked in the Bible where it talks about the way a slave should be with their master, and they just took that and ran with it and said, oh, so it's okay to have slaves, and these are the rules, and God approves. I think that they misinterpreted the Bible and just decided that's what it is. And having a slave meant you had some kind of wealth, and because you owned property, because they didn't see Black people as equal to them. And so they saw it as like a hierarchy, and they were the masters, we were the slaves, and our job was to obey and work, and that was our purpose. And, you know, In my opinion, I think that's where it came from. And I'm truly thankful that that's not where we are today, even though we still have such a long way to go. I do think that it was just the way of life back then. And it was hard, and it still is hard, even now, for people to see we are equal to them. We are not less than them. And that God created us all, and he loves us all. And that should be the end. You know what I mean? That's what it should be. So that's what I have learned in my own research and history. That doesn't mean that answers the whole question, but in my opinion, I think that that's why. And I think you just get used to doing the same thing. And if you're told over and over again that they're dirty and lazy and blah, 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 then you'll believe that. And if you don't have diverse interactions with different kinds of people in different walks of life, then why would you be forced to change the way that you think? You wouldn't be, because you've always believed that. You've never had any other experience to dispute that belief. And then when someone challenges it, you take it very personally as them challenging you. And, you know, that isn't the case. But certain habits are hard to break. And I definitely think that racism is something that needs to be broken, and it won't be easy for it to be done.
Yeah.
I feel very passionately about it. And another thing, having to explain these things to my kids has forced me to articulate these thoughts in a way that they understand.
Yeah.
It's age appropriate for them to comprehend. So that has helped.
Well, one thing that is interesting about all of the stuff that's been happening in the past year is really, I think, the separation, or maybe the realization of who feels a certain way about Black people and who doesn't.
Yes.
And it has been very, very disheartening in some cases. It's like, wow, oh, okay, interesting. And, you know, not good or bad, just an observation.
Mm-hmm. And definitely.
for example, my aunt and uncle are pastors in Anchorage, and they just recently took over the church, and they had been attending the church for a long time. Mm-hmm. And the church is predominantly white, and they didn't ask for this position. The board came to them and, you know, asked them if they would be interested in taking over for the pastor that was planning to leave. And long story short, they've lost a good percentage of their congregation because they're Black.
Wow.
And it's not just speculation that that's why. They've had several people, several members of their church say, I cannot be a member of a church with a Black pastor. Wow. And they had one who they were actually, you know, they thought they were close friends with. And, you know, the lady just told them, I love you guys very much, but I just cannot have a Black pastor.
Wow.
And that's why we're leaving. And it's like, it's shocking.
Yes.
It's really shocking. And I think that having conversations like this is really important, because so many people think that we are tripping. They think, like we don't have anything better to do than
complain about racism.
Exactly.
Or play the race card, they like to say.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But like I said, I don't think it's either good or bad. It just is. I try to take a non-judgmental stance in everything, because I, at the end of the day, I can't change anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't have a heaven or a hell to put them in. So so that's between them and God.
Absolutely.
And just like there are, like you were saying, there is good cops, there's bad cops. There's good teachers, there's bad teachers. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're all still just people, and we all have our stuff. I think it's the same with Christians. I mean, we all have our stuff. And mm-hmm. so, but it's just, it's very interesting to see what stuff is coming up right now.
Yes.
I was wondering if there is any observable difference in your family's experience on the East Coast versus the West Coast.
So, yes, definitely. We experienced more instances of racism on the East Coast, but I think that's only because we lived there longer than on the West Coast. So, on the East Coast, we would experience things such as police following us and racially profiling us as we drove around town in Princeton, New Jersey. That happened numerous times. And once, when Moses was just a baby, I remember taking him to a farmer's market in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, and seeing and hearing racism from the other patrons there as we were the only Black people there. However, the worst racism that I've ever experienced was in Agoura Hills, California. When we had moved there into a new neighborhood and only been living there for about 3 months, we had met the neighbors, spent a lot of time in that new community, when one afternoon, the police showed up at our house. My husband and I were in the kitchen making popcorn, getting ready to watch a movie. Moses was in second grade, and so he was at school at the time before I homeschooled the kids. And Grace was not even 2 years old yet, and she was with us. So anyway, I was in the kitchen, and I saw a police officer pointing a gun at me outside the doors.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. We had these glass doors, and he was standing.
I forgot about this. You told me about this. Oh my God.
He was shouting at me to open the door. And you know me, I shouted right back, I will, as soon as you put your gun down. And I think went back and forth a couple of times. And then he finally complied and put his gun down. And I slowly opened the door, and I asked him, you know, what's going on? And he said there was a report that someone was going from house to house, stealing mail. And that was so odd to me. And as everything began to unfold, we realized our house was surrounded by a SWAT team. And we could hear on the officer's radio them canceling a helicopter. And I remember that that was the first time I'd ever seen an AK-47 in real life.
You know, holy cow.
Once we showed them our driver's licenses and they realized, oh, we do live there, they finally left without apologizing. And I found out later from a neighbor that someone had seen my husband checking the mail, just like everyone else did in our neighborhood.
And my God.
Called the police because there was a Black man walking into our house. You know, it's really sad that after that horrific and traumatizing experience, we didn't feel safe in our home. I know that if my husband had been white, no one would have ever called the police. And the saddest thing is that I know that if my husband had still been in the backyard, they would have tackled him to the ground and possibly killed him.
Yeah.
You know, racism is racism, and you feel it no matter where you are. But those have been some of my experiences.
That's horrifying.
It took me a long time to tell that story to Moses because it happened when he was in second grade. And I didn't tell him about that story until maybe last year when the Black Lives Matter protests were happening. And he started asking more questions. And I spoke to my husband and I was like, do you think we should tell him now? Because I wanted to make sure that he knew the truth. And when we had that conversation, it was a very tough one to have. But I wanted him to know that racism is real. And you don't even have to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You can be in your own house and racism can show up at your door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask Breonna Taylor's family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very hard to process that story.
My gosh. Well, what are your hopes for the future as it pertains to equality in America for Black people?
You know, I was so excited that one of the first things that President Biden did as soon as his administration came into office was acknowledge that systemic racism does in fact exist. So many people try to say that systemic racism does not exist, but it does. And to hear the President of the United States say that out loud just blew me away. You know, my hope is that people will keep telling their stories of racism and an unflinching light will shine on how embedded racism is in the very fabric of this country. And that it will happen in a way that makes it impossible for racism to continue to thrive in America. My hope is that all racists, whether they be teachers, pastors, doctors, police officers, senators, judges, congressmen, any person that is in a public service position and holds any kind of power over a community of people, will be brought to justice and held accountable for their acts of racism. I think that racism needs to die. And my hope for the future is that it does.
Amen. Well said.
Thank you.
Well, if you're just joining us today, we are speaking with Natasha Boozer, and we are having a conversation about raising children of color in today's racial and social climate. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Natasha, I'm just going to ask what you have coming up and where our listeners can buy your book. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Christina Michelle. I've been your host today, and we've been having a conversation with Natasha Boozer, who is our guest, a wife, a mother of two, and an author. And Natasha has been sharing her own experiences with racism growing up here in Juno and experiences her and her family have had on the East Coast and the West Coast as well. But mainly, she's really opened up a lot about raising her children of color in today's racial climate. And Natasha, I really appreciate you being here and just sharing so openly with us and our listeners. Earlier, you talked about your book, and I was wondering if you could share with us where we can get a copy of it and also let us know what you have coming up.
So the book, again, is called The Palmer Women, and you can find it anywhere books are sold. I am currently working on a book that talks about my experiences growing up in Juneau, Alaska, and the racism that I went through. It's still in the works. It should be done in about a year and a half, but I felt like it was very important to share what systemic racism looks like from a child's perspective and a teenager's perspective and going into adulthood. And I think that Juneau is a good place to talk about it because you do have a melding of Native Americans and white Americans and Black Americans, but also other ethnic groups that are there. And I think that it's important to shed a light on the racism that does exist where I grew up, where we grew up. So it'll be stories, including my own story, along with my brothers and sisters, and even my parents, their experience as well. So a collaboration, because I think it's time to talk about the truth. And I would love to say and like to say, growing up in Alaska was an amazing experience. And I love Alaska. I love Juneau. And I can't wait to visit it again sooner than later. I miss it all the time. And it's still my home and my heart. And I don't want anyone to think that I just had a terrible time, because that's not the truth. But I do think that we need to speak up. We need to speak up and tell the truth and shame the devil, so that people can see this is real. It is not this make-believe thing that Black people talk about. And I will tell you, if there was no racism in the world, I guarantee you Black people or people of color would not talk about it. But yeah, it does exist, and it exists in so many intricate ways that it boggles the mind when you hear the different stories. Because sometimes it's on purpose, sometimes it's by accident. People don't always know they're being racist. But I think that you need to shine a light on it and say, this is what racism looks like. It's not just what you see on the news. It's things, little things that happen in your everyday life. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Do you have a title for that book yet?
No.
Is it a little premature? Okay. All right. I'm so looking forward to it. And I'm so proud of you. I can't wait for the second book. With The Palmer Women, your first book, you said you can get it anywhere books are sold. So is that like, yes, Barnes & Noble, Amazon?
Yes. Online, you can find it anywhere.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much for being with us, Natasha. I just adore you. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. This has been an amazing experience, and I can't believe I get to share it with you and our audience in Juneau and in Alaska. It makes me so happy that I get to have this conversation with you, and I am very, very proud of you. I'm so proud of you. You are an inspiration to so many people to keep fighting to achieve your goals and your dreams in life, and that it's okay to change what that looks like, to pivot. And Christina Michelle, your pivot is absolutely remarkable. I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. Oh my gosh, you're making me blush through the phone. And yes, Black people can blush.
Yes, we can. We can get sunburns and we can blush. Yes, we can. I have done both.
Okay, well, we are signing off. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And Culture Rich Conversations is produced by the Black Awareness Association of Juneau every Thursday during a Juneau afternoon at 3 p.m. We wanted to let you know that we will be taking a break for the summer starting after Memorial Day weekend, but you'll still be able to hear our shows played every Thursday at 3 p.m. like normal. We'll be playing some of our favorites from our archives. So if you're new to hearing our show, you may not have heard some of our earlier ones, and they're really good. You don't want to miss any of them. So we hope you'll still keep tuning in, and we will be back with you at the beginning of August. Until next week, take care.